Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
1890 453 106 is our local number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Just before the news, we were talking to Robert, and Robert runs a country company called Vivos that basically make bunkers. Now, he said it's not rich people, it's, you know, they're all middle class, but I think, you know, we can stretch our definition of middle class. But basically bunkers for fairly well-off people, in the most part, who want to prepare for whatever the apocalypse is going to be. They want to go into their bunker and be old and safe and warm there, so the rest of us will starve or eat each other or whatever the hell we're going to do come whatever the apocalypse is. These are exactly the types of issues I miss hearing on the radio because of my poxy job, says Sean. My apocalypse preparations to date are the purchase of an SAS survival book and a telescope. I don't know what I'm going to use the telescope for. You could dig a hole with it or something, I assume. Does he accommodate all the religions in the bunkers? I assume he said the one thing that they would refuse people was that on the grounds of being intolerant. So I assume he would extend that to himself. And, you know, when I asked him about, you know, is it a matter of when, not if, he did say, you know, that crazy guy in North Korea. Robin Monahan and many other people pointed out, when the shelter guy was listing out all the crazy guys in Korea and Islamic State, I can't help but thinking he was leaving somebody out. Yeah, I thought so too, but I just can't think of the name. Cooking food in a washing machine, would that be considered to be clean food, says Michael. Lots of people sent in similar jokes to that, which were equally as bad as yours, Michael. The giant shipworm got a lot of comment from people, especially people who then went and looked it up just to see how absolutely unbelievably skin-crawlingly disgusting it is when you see it being squeezed out of its tube. He won't release the location. Release it and kill them all. The world does not need giant shipworms. Thank you very much. Well, they don't do any harm. As they say, they're like buried up, you know, they're buried up to their backside in, well, they don't have a backside, but that much of them is buried in mud. And that's all they do. They just kind of suck mud all day long. And John in Limerick says, the movie Tremors was inspired by one of the writers seeing drawings of these giant worms. Be careful when you're in the desert, says John. Yes, I remember that movie. That was kind of enjoyably terrible. We also shared the fact with you that the word fizzle used to mean to fart quietly. And Morris says, what about fizzle stick sweets? Are they little fart sticks? I'm genuinely shocked. I don't know, Maura. I assume it depends on how many of them you eat. Now, I just want to point one thing out. Today is not Thursday. It is Friday. It is Movies and Booze Day. So some of you might tune in and, you know, over the next hour go, what is it, Thursday? Reason being is that James Dempsey is in the studio to do the movies part. Afternoon, James. James is standing in for Esther, who I don't know. I thought she saw George Clooney in a dream, and she's receiving treatment for it. We are joined once again by Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon, Dean.
Hello, how are you doing?
Are you well? So, is it a bit of a pun fest in terms of beers today?
It wasn't timed for the spot that you were doing earlier on, but we will be tasting Bush today.
Yes.
Yes. So we have a beer called Bush from De Boisson. It's spelled B-U-S-H, which is the regular spelling for Bush, and there are too many double entendres that are going to be going on today, so I apologise for all of them. There is another Bush that's spelled with a C. And that's
B-U-C-H?
B-U-S-C-H.
Right, okay, yeah, gotcha, yeah. Right.
So, and they had some difficulty in Belgium because they couldn't export their Bush because Anheuser-Busch owned the other Bush.
Ah, the Bush with a C.
With the C, yeah.
Yes.
But they have started exporting the beer in the last 5 or 6 years. An absolutely wonderful beer, 12%, and then we'll be doing a cocktail.
Right.
As well.
Okay, fantastic. A cocktail made of what and what?
Made of the first beer that we're tasting, Bush, mixed with Timmermans Pêche, peach lambic.
Right, okay. So, and is this all coming from Belgium today?
All coming from Belgium. And the Bush beer is 12%. The Timmermans Lambic is only 4%.
So it's like drinking water. Yes.
So when you put the two of them together, you end up with an 8% beer because it's the
Is
average
that technically
of the,
true?
If it's one for one, yeah, it's a direct.
Oh, I suppose, yeah. But if it's more drink. Of one than the other, then it
wouldn't
be.
Then it would, yeah, lean in that direction. Yeah.
Yeah. So we would be, we are actually getting into cocktail territory in terms of strength.
It's, well, at the 12%, that's typically beer yeast, which is the ingredient that produces the alcohol in the beer, can work, if it's a highly alcohol tolerant yeast, can work up to about 14 to 17%. So we're definitely up at the upper end of what a normal beer can be at.
Right. The hashtag, by the way, is Sheepy Movies Back to the Future. Has been replayed many times at this stage of the game. Grazing Arizona, Beauty and the Bleat, and some like it, Hot Pot. There's many more. They're all absolutely excellent. Anyway, James, what movies are we doing today?
Yeah, this is quite different. I don't get any beer on a Thursday. I quite like this Friday
yeah,
feeling.
This is, do you like craft beers?
I like beer in general. I do like a good Belgian Trappist beer. Always are very nice. I listened to a really good podcast about Trappist beer and it was very interesting. So I'm intrigued by any Belgian bush.
Yes. Which is probably the first time you've ever said that.
So the movies we're going to talk about today are an Irish one called Handsome Devil, which is out obviously today, and yeah, then a British one named Their Finest. So we're keeping it very localised, really, in terms of these islands.
And Their Finest, is Richard E. Grant in it?
Richard E. Grant, yes. It's directed by Lone Scherfig, who directed An Education and One Day. She's a Danish director who kind of has moved into really specialised British movies. And it stars Gemma Arterton, Sam Claflin, Bill Nighy is particularly good in it. Handsome Devil has a fair few Irish people you recognise in it as well, along the lines of Andrew Scott, Ardal O'Hanlon, Amy Huberman, and then two young guys who are rising stars as well.
And John Butler, the director of Handsome Devil, is this his first movie?
It's his second, so he made The Stag as well a few years ago.
Ah, right, okay, yeah. Yeah, I did a TV show with John Butler like a million years ago. Which is why he is where he is now. I have absolutely no doubt. Okay, so Dean, we'll start off with our first beer of the day. Yeah. So tell us all about it.
So this is Bush. It's a 12% ABV strong amber ale. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for beers to compare it to...
Now, first off, these glasses are just absolutely extraordinary.
They are cool.
I feel like I should be saying mass with this rather than drinking beer out of it.
Yeah, it's a chalice-shaped glass. And what's particularly unique about this glass is that they do a special treatment of the glass after the glass has been moulded.
Okay.
It's put through a process that causes the glass to semi-fracture.
Which is why it looks like it's just about to disintegrate under your hand.
This is a little bit crass if you're drinking the beer. If you touch the inside of the glass, it's perfectly smooth. But the outside feels like it's about to crack. And it's quite an expensive process to put it through, but it's very distinctive. The glass itself is chalice-shaped. It's got a kind of a almost diamond shape.
It is a beautiful one. Do most, particularly in Belgium... Is it becoming a thing now that you have to produce your own glass to go with your beer?
Always has been. And if you're in Belgium, if you go into a bar, at least the better bars in Belgium that serve a range of different beers, if they have the beer behind the counter but they don't have the glass, they will still refuse to serve you the beer until such time as they get the correct glass back from whoever's using it and clean it and then serve the the beer.
So you have to kind of roam around the bar looking for some gob who's drinking the beer you want. You think, we're going to move on, will you? It's my turn now.
they're quite obsessive about it. And it's not really been understood. They haven't really looked into the direct impact of the shape of the glass on beer until quite recently, but they're really starting to understand exactly how different shaped glasses impact on the taste of the beer. Mm. And of course, if a brewery uses a particular shaped glass, in the brewery they're going to be using that glass every time they taste the beer. So as they fine tune the beer, it's going to be best in that glass. So they want the experience.
Or is it more like IPAs are good in this sort of a shaped glass, rather than this particular IPA is a different glass to that particular sort of IPA?
Yeah, no, generally there is an IPA glass now, and that has a kind of a specific shape, but would work for a range of different IPAs. Generally, a lot of the Belgian beers tend to be the glasses for Belgian beers, they tend to be chalice shaped. But the other beer that I mentioned that would be of a similar style to Bush, Quack, has a yardarm glass, so it looks like a piece of glassware from a laboratory. It's got a bulbous round base.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then it goes in narrow and comes up again. It's very, very distinctive. And it used to be that the only Quack glasses that you had a round base. So you had to hang it in a special frame. But they have done quack glasses now with a flat base because lots of people were putting the glass down and the glass would fall over.
Speaking of grass, I remember once being in Yorkshire and, you know, people were drinking bitter. And it was lovely bitter. It was much nicer than the bitter you'd get in London. And everybody was freely belching like lunatics. And I thought these people are disgusting. But I kind of got it because when you burped, you got taste. You got a kind of weird aftertaste of the beer that you didn't get when it was on the way down, if you know what I mean. And actually in this, I burped there and I just got a bit of fruit when I burped. So this kind of, is what made me think of it.
There's a technical term for that. It's retronasal flavour.
Of course it is. Yeah. That's what I meant to say. Yes. Yeah,
what you've got. If you take this beer and if you swirl it and if you want to cover the top of the glass, it'll capture the aroma molecules in the top of the glass. As you're swirling it, that's releasing volatiles into the glass. And then if you smell it, get that fruit flavour.
Yeah.
So it concentrates up the flavour. And as you smell it up through your nose, you're smelling it orthonasally, which is straight up your nose. But where you got it from a burp or where it would normally be caught is as you breathe in and breathe out through your nose, you're carrying those volatiles down your throat, back up the back of your nose and to exactly the same receptors that pick it up as you're smelling it. But sometimes you can get different flavours retronasally as opposed to orthonasally. So it depends on the person.
Okay.
But with this one, the fruit flavour now, I don't know whether it's an interesting thing because when it comes to flavour, it's very much, it's individual, it's context specific, and it can be quite complicated. So when we're detecting flavours, there are certain flavours that most everybody will naturally detect. That's sweet, sour, bitter, salty, and savoury. And the reason why we naturally detect them is we have receptors on our tongue for them and we're genetically programmed to understand those flavors and also to react in a certain way. So generally with sweet and salt, we react positively because sweet is a sign that you're going to have calories from the food in question. So we want calories and that's a good thing.
Right, okay.
Salt will help with your electrolyte balance. So if you're in a desert, for example, and you were getting dehydrated, an important thing would be to have enough salt to keep your balance right in your body. Sour and bitter can be signs either of something being not right, having spoiled, or possibly a poison. So genetically, we're programmed to react negatively to sour and bitter. So if you give a baby a taste of vinegar, they'll start, making funny faces.
Who'd do that? Anyway, you monster, Dean.
They've done experiments with two-month-old kids to
so
see.
So you're saying me burping fruit, that's just me. I need to have a banana or something. That wouldn't have happened to me at all.
Now, curiously, I'm just curious, do you pick that up as a fruit flavour or as banana?
No, it was just kind of general fruit flavour.
Because in order to kind of isolate individual flavours, what you need to do is kind of build up your memory of that flavour, and then you effectively build an image of the flavour in your mind, and then when you taste that flavour you can match it up. So sometimes people will build up images of different fruit flavours but not differentiate whether it's banana or peach or apricot or whatever. So when they experience something like that, it just triggers fruity. With that, it's a specific flavour, isoam acetate, which is ripe banana. It's like really yellow bananas.
Oh, right, okay. I should have stuck with it. Oh, yes, it was definitely banana. Right. Were you burping fruit, James?
Regrettably not, but I am very intrigued by all of this glassware and banana talk. And then there are other beers that I would taste banana flavours with. Like Budvar or stuff like that I would get a strong hint of banana off, but maybe I'm just making that up.
Wheat beers in particular, yeah, wheat beers can get banana and clove. With this one, it's bananas, caramel. So now if you're American, you might be more familiar with the dessert Bananas Foster, which is a banana caramel dessert. With this as well, it's brewed with a Belgian yeast, so you get a certain amount of spice flavour with it, and that comes through as chilli, black pepper, white pepper, and there's a little bit of an aftertaste of clove as well. But it's a very interesting beer. The alcohol is interesting because at 12%, it's quite a step above most of the beers that we've tasted ever on the show. There's only, I think, one or two beers that we've tasted that have been stronger than that.
Yeah.
But it's lacking in higher alcohols, which are the harsher alcohols, the ones that you associate with methylated spirits, so it's easier to drink. But there's still quite an alcohol vapour in your mouth, and that alcohol vapour tends to carry the flavour as well.
It's so absolutely lovely. And the thing, you're right. Like when it gets the higher alcohol, it's just hitting you over the head with the alcohol, really. It overwhelms, can overwhelm things, but that's lovely. That really is lovely.
Beer. Now, it's very interesting what happens. We'll be mixing this 50-50 with another beer, and there's very interesting interactions that happens.
I'm sure there are.
Like dancing. Miko says, I got that from a kipper the other day. I burped the next day, and all I could taste was kipper. That meal lasted for days, says Miko. So you got your money's worth. That's good to hear, Miko. Well done. Has the beer messiah drank Shirkin, an IPA lass from the West Cork Brewing Company based in Baltimore and West Cork? I had it last night. It's divine, says Fergus.
I haven't as yet. I'm down in Killarney in a few weeks' time judging some Irish beers. So now the difficulty with that is I'm going to be judging them blind. So I'm going to be tasting a whole pile of Irish beers and catching up on ones that I mightn't have tasted before, but I won't know which ones I've tasted until afterwards.
All right. I'm hosting the in-laws next week. They're from Somerset, the home of cider. Can you let me know what the Mercedes-Benz of cider is so I can make a good impression by having a case of it?
Oh, okay. Well, in Ireland, there are some superb Irish craft ciders. There's an organisation called Cider Ireland that has all of the authentic craft ciders. Stonewell do some superb ciders. Craigie's has just been taken over by O'Hara's, and they're doing some interesting ones. Mark Jenkinson is doing some great ones as well. So there's great craft ciders. You need to hunt them out a bit in the specialty independent stores.
On an allied question, you know the way that students like to make snake bites, a mixture of beer and cider on a night out. Is there any company that makes them pre-made? I'm throwing a college reunion and think it would be the perfect addition, but we're nearly 40 now, so we'd like to have a bit of class. Oh yeah, drinking snake bites. That's a bit of class. I thought it used to be Carlsberg Special Brew and cider, which was, believe you me, a lethal combination. I could tell your stories, but for legal reasons, I'm actually constrained from telling them from my dark past.
I think a lot of people find, for some reason, that when you mix lager and cider, that it has more of an alcohol impact on them.
It's so banana juice.
And I can imagine what it would be like with Special Brew, because I think that's 9% ABV.
Brian in Scary says, I had a quack in one of those strange glasses mentioned. The bar in question, in an attempt to prevent theft of the glasses, used to drop a basket from the ceiling where you were asked to deposit one of your shoes. Bring the glass back and you get your shoe back. I woke up the next morning, I'd already one shoe and no glass. Strong beer that crack, says Brian. It's Gary's. Right, so what movie would you like to do first?
I suppose we'll start with Handsome Devil.
Okay, we'll start with Handsome Devil after this.
Listen to you, the baying crowd, bleating like sheep. Why do you assume that this lesson isn't for you? Never, ever, ever use a borrowed voice. You're all individual. Stop! Stop! You spend your whole life being someone else. Who's going to be you? Get out!
There you go. Interesting clip, that, in the sense that for the first few moments you don't know what kind of situation it is until you hear that someone getting hit across their head with a book and you know it's a classroom.
Exactly.
That's a Handsome Devil there. James Dempsey, what kind of a school? Is it a school-based story?
It is, yes. Yeah. So it's really about two schoolboys, more so than about their teachers, but the teachers do play a role in it as well. So it's set in a boarding school somewhere in, we'll say, South Dublin, a fictional boarding school, and a rugby school at that. And it is about two boys. One is an outsider in the school. He's not very popular with his fellow students. He's a bit, he's basically into like vinyl records and punk rock, and he wears badges and dyes his hair red.
Okay.
His name is Ned. He's played by Fiona O'Shea, and he's got his own room until suddenly this big, you know, muscular rugby player arrives in his room as well that they have to share together. His name is Connor. He's played by Nicholas Galitzine. And immediately they sort of do not get on because they're chalk and cheese, personality-wise and interest-wise. So Ned builds a Berlin Wall between them in the room. He stacks all the furniture. And slowly but surely, a friendship begins to sort of kindle between the two of them. And it's all then about, it then begins to sort of move towards kind of who they are and who their identities are as framed by everyone else in the school. Because essentially, Ned is gay, this young gay guy, and the other guys in the school don't like him because of that. They tease him because of that. And he's got this new friend who's on the rugby team, and they're sort of strumming guitars and messing around and playing. And And what does this mean for their relationship based on his sexuality and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And then into that, you also then get sort of a bit of intrigue in the school because a new English teacher has arrived in the shape of Andrew Scott, who people would know obviously from Sherlock, who we heard in the clip there doing, you know, very typical English teacher performance in, mm. in movies. I am a former teacher, so it just always annoys me that the only inspirational teachers are always English teachers.
There are other subjects
that are inspirational as well.
You never hear about inspirational physics teachers or geography teachers. Oh my God, my passion for geography.
It would be nice once.
It would be nice once in a while. Yeah.
So he is trying to encourage the boys to find themselves and explore alternate interests. But at the same time, the rugby team, which is coached by Mo Dunford, who plays Pascal, the rugby coach, he sees Connor, this incredible wunderkind of a rugby player, as the opportunity to finally get to the final for the first time in 10 years.
Okay.
And it's all very much moving around that. And to say anything more than that would be to give away large parts of the plot that I don't want to do. But
yeah,
I will say every other review of this that I have seen has been incredibly positive, and mine is lukewarm, I would say.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that I'm the only one that's right.
Go on.
But I'm just saying this was my personal biases were rather annoyed by some big aspects of the film. And that is that it's trying to be this incredibly worthy tale about young Irish people and sort of sexual identity, and that's definitely an interesting story. The problem is it's also been better told already by Irish movies.
I felt like I'd heard, when you described the plot, I felt like I've seen this movie before, or I've read this book before.
Yeah, you've definitely you've heard this story before, 100 times before. What is problematic with it as well is that it comes after we've had this great glut of Irish movies that have been really good, and they've also been really good stories about young people. So last year alone, we got Sing Street, we got The Young Offenders, we got A Date for Mad Mary. And each of them tells this kind of story in a much better and much more engaging way than I found this film. The second problem I had with it is that Ned, as a character, is really frustrating in his gayness, if I can say that, because he is so utterly chaste, I can never quite remember how you pronounce that, chaste. Yeah. He's so chaste that he's asexual. His sexuality is nothing. I mean, he's supposed to be this 16-year-old boy surrounded by these rugby-playing toffs in South Dublin. And does a single one of them catch his eye? No.
He's not gay enough for you.
And I mean that, Sean. And you might think that that's a really, like, almost a backwards notion, that he's not walking around, you know, lisping and mincing through the school hallway. But that's actually not a good thing, because it would be a more intriguing narrative choice to see a boy like that walking around brazenly in a South Dublin rugby school, putting up with the actual realities of what that is.
How do you know? How do you know he's gay?
I actually am not 100% convinced that he is. Even like the film, definitely. So the way his classmates know is that he has diverse interests that are not rugby. So they walk into his, you know, his room, and he's got, I think it's a band poster for Suede, the band, and in this poster there's two guys kissing. But even before they see that, they've already decided he's gay. Which, look, I was a teacher, so I know that gay is a de facto
term of abuse.
But they really mean it in this case, and they just assume it. And I'm pretty sure the film follows through on that. But as I said, it is so chaste that I'm not 100% convinced that that it is the case.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, maybe they meant to leave a bit of ambiguity there.
Maybe they did, but based on everything else that happens in the film, they didn't.
Somebody wants to know, is this the Irish Goodwill Hunting?
It's definitely not the Irish Goodwill Hunting.
Or an attempt to be.
You know, that's about like this academic genius who's real troubled and so on and so forth. The Irish Goodwill Hunting is a bit more A Date for Mad Mary in some ways, because she's, you know, this brazen, you know, weapon, we'll say. This isn't. What this is a kind of like, it's a schoolboy story. It has jokes that works, that work, and it is funny, but it's not in any way as worthy or impactful as I think it thinks it is. Or certainly it wasn't
trying
for me.
To be.
Or as it's trying to be.
Yeah.
And that really is a problem. The characters are just woefully underdeveloped, in my opinion. I mean, Amy Huberman is basically a glorified cameo as his stepmother, who is sitting in the front of a car smoking cigarettes. And I would genuinely say she smokes more cigarettes than she has lines in the movies, in the film. And all of the characters across the board just make these grand, you know, statements and choices and so on that none of the preceding hour and a half of the film really kind of lead up to. And I found it very poorly developed in terms of why everyone is doing what they were doing or why anyone was making the decisions they were making.
Another texter says, this movie sounds like the other side of Ross O'Carroll Kelly. Is that a fair assessment? I don't know what they mean by that.
So it is, I mean, it is about posh Dubliners in the south side. So I would assume that's what they're going for in that part. Definitely there's a nod and a wink to that kind of sensibility. It has been a very successful film in terms of showing at international festivals. It showed at Toronto, which is, you know, a major international film festival. And I think it opened Edinburgh or Glasgow, somewhere in Scotland.
Yes.
I've had some beer, bear with me. This isn't my regular game.
The Isle of Skye Film Festival. It was actually the only film there.
And it showed at the Dublin International Film Festival as well. So it has been a festival hit. And certainly, I will say, other Irish reviewers have found more enjoyment in it than I did. So I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from going to see it. It is an Irish movie. You know, just go and confirm all of my biases.
Right. Tommy in County Mayo says, was I tripping or did you guys mention a sequel to Blade Runner? It was a couple of weeks ago. I just barely heard you. Now, I don't know.
Yeah, that's on the
You're not in a position to say whether Tommy was tripping at the time or not. He may well have been, but that's up to Tommy.
But it is coming. Yeah, it is coming. It's coming in the summertime. It's going to be a big tentpole summer movie. And it's got Harrison Ford in it as well. And
your man, the handsome guy.
Ryan Gosling,
that's the guy.
It's got a good cast.
The trailer actually looks good, even though I thought it was desecration to try and remake Blade Runner or do a follow-up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's also going to, I suppose, finally answer the is Deckard an android question that is left lingering.
Yeah, perhaps. Or perhaps it won't. Last week, after some craft beer, I farted and got rotten eggs. No banana. What did I do wrong? Well, you're just not trying hard enough. Does the beer guy know where I can get a Belgian beer called Korsendonk? No joke. Had it in Belgium and loved it.
It is a lovely beer. I don't know if it's being brought into Ireland. I haven't seen it, so it might be a trip back to Belgium. But the flights are inexpensive. It's well worth the experience.
Can you ask the beer lad about an Italian beer company, Paul Bricius, B-R-I-C-I-U-S, and pronouncing it right. Some lovely beers, can't find them here, says Big Ron.
Yeah, there's a huge number of new Italian craft breweries that have opened up over the last 10 to 15 years, and very few of them are being brought into Ireland, only about five or six of them. And it's quite difficult to get them over here, but they are doing some really interesting things with beers over in Italy. There's a big movement towards beers. Lots of people kind of 18 to 30, 40, 30, 35 are choosing beer ahead of wine. They see wine as being something their parents drink, and they're going for beer instead.
A couple of comments on Handsome Devil. Owen says, Andrew Scott is one of our finest exports. I saw him in the play Sea Wall. He brought tears to my stony heart, says Owen. God. Apparently Brian O'Driscoll choreographed the rugby scenes for the movie.
That's right, yeah. I saw an interview with the director and Fionn O'Shea, who plays Ned, the young guy, and he said that, Fionn O'Shea had actually skipped that part of the it, because he had played rugby previously, so he didn't want to get involved. And he was then learned after the fact that Brian O'Driscoll had done the choreographing.
Oh yeah, that's a shame. Ken says, can you please ask your beer expert where I can get a craft beer called Dublin Blonde? I was in Dublin last week, tried it in a bar somewhere, but for the life of me can't remember where it was. Is this beer readily available, and if so, where can I buy it? It was gorgeous.
I'm not familiar with it, so I'm not any help, I'm afraid.
Oh, there you go, Ken. So,
yeah.
You want to drink less the next time you're in Dublin, Ken. That's the lesson there. Okay, we've got one more beer, one more film to go. We'll do all that after.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.